checking the other screens. Thank God for small miracles. I'll probably have to resign after this if Humphreys doesn't fire me outright.
Pacing the length of the big bedroom, Humphreys muttered, I don't like this. I don't like being cooped up in here. Victoria Ferrara suppressed an incipient smile. He's really frightened, she thought. Normally, if we were locked in this bedroom together, he'd peel this robe off me and pop me between the sheets. I don't like waiting, he said louder. Think of it this way, she suggested, not moving from the chair where she sat. Fuchs is dying out there. When those fireproof doors open again, you can go out and stand over his dead body. He nodded, but it was perfunctory. The thought of victory over Fuchs obviously didn't outweigh his innate fear for his own life.
Fuchs's lungs were burning. The metal walls of the ventilator shaft were scorching hot now as he crawled along blindly, dragging Nodon's inert body with one pain-cramped hand. He couldn't see Amarjagal or Sanja behind him. He didn't even know if they were still there. His entire world had narrowed down to this smoke-filled, blistering, hot purgatory. Through tear-filled eyes, he saw a light up ahead. It can't be, he told himself. I'm starting to hallucinate. The garden outside is still in its nighttime lighting mode. There can't be bright lighting out there. His heart clenched in his chest. Unless the guards have turned up all the outdoor lights. Like a badger, Fuchs scuttled along the upward slanting shaft, leaving Nodon and the others behind. Light! Air! He bumped his head against a metal grill, feeling blessedly cool air caressing his hot, sooty face. The smoke was streaming out. Fresh air was seeping in. With his bare hands, Fuchs battered the grill, punched it until his knuckles were raw and bleeding, butted it with his head, finally forced it open by wedging his feet against the sides of the shaft and leaning one powerful shoulder against the thin metal and pushing with all his strength. It gave way at last. He took one huge gulp of fresh air, wiped at his eyes with grimy hands, then ducked back down the shaft to grab Nodon by the collar of his coveralls and haul him up onto the roof. Amarjagal's head popped up behind Nodon's booted feet. She too was grimy, soot-streaked, but she smiled and pulled herself out of the shaft.
Stay low, Fuchs hissed. The guards must be patrolling the grounds.
Sanja came up and crawled on his belly to lay beside Fuchs. They looked out onto the splendid garden just beyond the mansion's wall and farther to the trees and green, flowering shrubbery of this artificial Eden, planted deep below the surface of the moon. And there were guards standing out there, armed with assault rifles, ready to shoot, to kill.
Shining Mountain Base. You there, the guard yelled. Stop that, or I'll shoot. Pancho realized that her necklace was tucked inside the dreaded soft suit. She couldn't reach it, couldn't whip it off her neck and toss it at the goon. Probably wouldn't have time to do it before he drilled me anyway, she thought as she slowly climbed to her feet and raised both gloved hands over her helmeted head. She nudged the laser slightly with her boot. It was still on. Still cutting away at the honeycomb shield outside the dome's wall. Who the devil are you? The guard demanded, walking slowly around the mini-tractor, a pistol leveled at Pancho's navel. He looked African, but spoke like an Englishman. And what the devil do you think you're doing? Pancho shrugged inside the soft suit. Nothing, she said, trying to look innocent. My God! The guard yelped, seeing that hole cut into the dome wall and the bright red hot spot the laser was making on the honeycomb shield. Turn that thing off! Now! Didn't you realize you could... At that instant, the honeycomb cracked open and a rush of air knocked Pancho flat against the curving dome wall. The guard was staggered, but kept his senses enough to realize what was happening. He turned and ran as fast as he could, which wasn't very fast because he was leaning against a gale-force wind trying to rush out of the hole Pancho had cut. The loudspeakers started yammering in Japanese, then in another language Pancho didn't understand. She slid down to the floor and slithered out of the break, hoping the soft suit wouldn't catch or tear on the broken edges of the holes the laser had made. Outside, she looked around the barren lunar landscape. The dome was on the crest of the Ringwall Mountains that surrounded Shackleton. The ground sloped away, down toward the floor of the crater. Nothing to see but rocks and mini-craters, some of them no bigger than a finger-poke into the stony ground. Damn, Pancho thought, I'm on the wrong side of the dome. Without hesitation, she began sprinting, looking for the launch pads, happy to be able to run inside a spacesuit. Inside the old hard-shell suits, it was impossible to do anything more than lumber along like Frankenstein's monster. That guard will be okay, she told herself. There's plenty of air inside the dome. They'll get the leak plugged before anybody's in real danger. Jogging steadily, she grinned to herself. Meantime, while they're chasing around trying to fix the damage I've done, I'll get to one of the hoppers and head on home. A sickly pale green splotch of color appeared on the left side of her helmet. The earphones said, Radiation warning. Radiation level exceeding maximum allowable. Get to shelter immediately. I'm trying, Pancho said, surprised at the suit's sophistication. Before she took another dozen strides, the color went from pastel green to bright canary yellow. Radiation warning, the suit said again. Radiation level exceeding maximum allowable. Get to shelter immediately. Pancho gritted her teeth and wondered how she could shut off the suit's automated voice synthesizer. The launch pads were still nowhere in sight.
Nobuhiko was back at the base's infirmary, this time in a screened-off cubicle barely large enough to hold a bed, looking down on the heavily sedated Daniel Tsavo. A spotless white bandage covered the upper half of the Kenyan's black face. He was conscious, but barely so, as the tranquilizing drug took effect. She blinded me, he was mumbling. Blind, can't see. Yamagata glanced impatiently at the African doctor standing on the other side of Tsavo's bed. It's only temporary, the doctor said, trying to sound reassuring. He seemed to be speaking to Yamagata rather than his patient. The retinal burns will heal in a few days. Failed, Tsavo muttered. Failure. Blind. Nowhere to go. Career ruined. Bending slightly over the bed, Nobuhiko said, You haven't failed. You'll be all right. Rest now. Everything will be fine in a day or two. Tsavo's right hand groped toward the sound of Yamagata's voice. Nobuhiko instinctively backed away from it. Did you find her? The Kenyan asked, his voice suddenly stronger. Did you get what you wanted from her? Yes, of course, Nobuhiko lied. You rest now. Everything has turned out very well. Tsavo's hand fell back to the sheets, and he breathed a heavy sigh. The doctor nodded as if satisfied that the drugs had finally done their job. Then he made a small shooing gesture. Nobuhiko understood. He turned away from the bed and stepped out of the tiny cubicle. He wrinkled his nose at the smell of antiseptics that pervaded this part of the infirmary. He had spent many hours in hospitals when his father was dying. The odor brought back the memory of those unhappy days. The pair of aides waiting for him out in the corridor snapped to attention almost like elite corps soldiers, even though they wore ordinary business suits. Have they found her? Nobuhiko asked in Japanese. Not yet, sir. Nobu frowned as he started walking toward the exit, allowing his aides to see how displeased he was. To come all this way to the moon, he thought, and have her slip away from us. Hot anger simmered through him. The senior of the two assistants, noting the obvious displeasure on his master's face, tried to change the subject. Will the black man recover his sight? Apparently, Nobuhiko snapped, but he is not to be trusted with any important tasks. Never again. Both aides nodded. As they reached the double doors of the infirmary, the handheld of the senior aide beeped. He flicked it open and saw a Yamagata engineer in a sky-blue hard hat staring wide-eyed in the miniaturized screen. The dome has been penetrated, the engineer blurted. We have sent for repair crews. The aide looked stricken. He turned to Yamagata, wordlessly asking him for instructions. She did this, Nobu said, despite